Welcome to the archives of Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. The biography of a president of the United States is often based on second-hand information and prepared without explicit authority from the president himself. In 1985, Edmund Morris, who was born in Kenya and educated in South Africa, was authorized and appointed by President Ronald Reagan to be the official biographer for the 40th President of the United States. Morris, who characterizes Reagan as a man truly difficult to know, had unprecedented access to President Reagan, both in and out of the White House. He met regularly with Reagan and reviewed Reagan's daily handwritten White House journal, as well as Reagan's earlier writing. A fictional character narrates Morris's 1999 book entitled Dutch, a memoir of Ronald Reagan, which is uncommon in most biographical interpretations. When I spoke with Edmund Morris about Dutch in November of 1999, I asked him to help us understand the personality of Ronald Reagan.
The personality of Ronald Reagan struck me at first as being more or less what you see is what you get. But I very soon realized, after our first few meetings in the early 1980s, that what you see was what in a large part you did not get. In other words, he was a very private person who, behind his public persona, the charm, the grace, the oratory, the good looks, concealed all sorts of depths which are fascinating to a biographer but were not perceptible at first.
Well, tell us what some of those depths are.
Well, for example, he managed to conceal the fact that he was a highly imaginative person who lived very happily in the world of the imagination. During his presidency, he was often accused of having fantasies and living in the world of the movies, but those were superficial. Reagan was a creative person, and I realized this when I first began to read his short stories and essays that he wrote as a high school student and college student. He had an amazingly arching imagination, particularly in regard to himself. The hero of all these youthful short stories is, almost to an occult extent, the recognizable future Ronald Reagan, President of the United States.
Do you think he actually conceptualized that goal when he was in high school?
I don't think he ever said to himself, "I will be President of the United States." But when I talk about him being imaginative, he was able to fantasize and bring it to reality, whatever his current dreams might be. When he was young, his current dream was to be a radio announcer. And indeed, after fantasizing about it at college and practicing literally with a broomstick, he would hold a broomstick and sort of speak into it as though it was a microphone, and narrate whole imaginary baseball games for his friends in the dorm. No sooner had he left college than, lo and behold, he became a radio announcer and sportscaster in Des Moines, Iowa. Much later in his life as president, he conceptualized the Strategic Defense Initiative, and even though it would have cost as much as a new United States Navy and would have taken decades and decades to build, at once Reagan's imagination enabled him to see it and imagine it and negotiate on the basis of it with such conviction that Gorbachev just had to retire from him.
Well, when you mention the Strategic Defense Initiative coming from his imagination, that counters some of what American political scientists have said, that he really didn't come up with anything. Instead, he parroted what his advisors said. Do you find that to be true?
Oh, absolutely not, no. Look, Reagan was quite content for 80% of the presidency, 80% of the issues that came up before him, as before any president, were routine issues to do with the administration and government and relations with Congress and boring little bills. Every president has to deal with this kind of junk. And Reagan was very happy to be directed by his expert staff on these trivial matters. But for the 20%, should we say, of really large, enormously important issues that we elect presidents to handle, such as nuclear defense, domestic peace, what to do about welfare and the national economy, these large blocks of policy, nobody could advise Reagan on. He had his own very strong ideas, which he developed over a lifetime. And in that respect, he was so strong that he was definitely an authoritative president of the United States.
Well, you mention in your book that his assassination attempt had a very strong effect on him physically and mentally.
Yes.
How so mentally? What was the change?
Mentally, I think the better word would be spiritually. It had a spiritual effect on him in the sense that he quite genuinely believed he'd been spared by God from death. And by the way, he was on the very point of death, having lost 50% of his blood supply in that emergency. He wrote unselfconsciously in his diary, "I have been spared, and what time I have left now is time to serve him," with a capital H. So in other words, when you consider that this assassination attempt happened at the very first year of Reagan's eight-year presidency, the final 7.5 years, he had the spiritual conviction that he'd been spared to bring about the things he did bring about. Most dramatically, the confrontation with the Soviet Union, which led to its eventual demise.
You talk in the preface about how he had no personal interest in people, and write that they were and remained a faceless audience to his perpetual performance. How does the performance and the perpetual performance fit in to what we're talking about?
Well, I'm here talking about the psychology of an actor. Reagan was, by nature, an actor. That's more than just simply by training. He was by nature. He was born an actor. They are a different species. Actors require audiences. They have to be seen doing what they do. They have to cultivate an attitude toward other human beings, which is that of the actor surveying his audience. In other words, Reagan was uncomfortable with one-on-one intimacy. If I was alone in the Oval Office with him, he was never at his best. He seemed shy, awkward, uninteresting. His stories were banal, and his ignorance was pretty distressing. But if two people joined me, or three or four, already this was an audience, and Reagan would become normal. He'd become happy and authoritative and funny and dramatic. And the bigger the audience, the better he performed. So that's what I meant by saying that he was, that he saw faces more or less as those anonymous faces in an audience, but he didn't focus on any particular face or on any particular character.
When you talk about actors being a different species, you say later in the text, you quote the president as saying, "I missed not having someone to love." How does that fit in with the different species, as you characterize them?
Well, I think I also said in the text at that point that when he said that, I made a little sign in my notes, a little curlicue, which signifies he means the opposite of what he says. When Reagan said, "I missed having someone to love," that's an actor's way of saying, "I missed having someone love me." He was speaking specifically about Jane Wyman, his first wife, who had left him in 1947 because, quite frankly, he had begun to bore her. He talked so incessantly about politics at that time, and Jane herself was discovering herself as an actress, that she just couldn't stand it any longer, his self-absorption in politics, and she walked out. Now, when your wife walks out on you, and you're an actor, you have lost the most vital part of your audience. She's taken away her love, she's taken away her approbation and her applause. And that's why Reagan was so devastated by that divorce.
And that's the symbol that he wished that there was someone for him to love.
No, I just didn't believe him when he said that. He was actually saying the reverse of what he said.
Yeah, I understand that's what you're saying.
Lost he had lost his audience. And there is no trauma worse for an actor than to be told by the most intimate person in your relationship that you are boring.
Let me take a moment and say that we're talking this week with Edmund Morris, who is the author of Dutch, a memoir of Ronald Reagan. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Edmund, the literary device that you've used of creating a fictional character to tell part of the story has come under some discussion, if not attack, if not criticism, since your book has come out. Were you trying to create a new form in terms of a slight use of fiction in what otherwise would be fairly accurate biography?
Oh, yes, I was quite deliberately trying to create a new form, and with all modesty, I think I've succeeded. When I say new form, it's actually something which goes back to Homer. It's the very essence of narrative writing, and that is for an authoritative and trustworthy storyteller to tell you a story about some great hero who comes out of nothing and achieves great things. The only fictional liberty I've taken is to create this narrator early on in the book, a person who Reagan is never aware of, whose life is roughly parallel with his. It never quite interlocks with Reagan's life, but it runs sort of in parallel with his. So this person is in a position, rather like a camera, to observe Reagan developing from ordinariness and going on to the heights of world power. Everything the narrator sees and records, every word and thought and act and sight and sound and smell, are all matters of fact and record. The only fictitious device is the personality of the narrator. And even he, right toward the end, about the last third of the book, becomes me, since I was physically in the White House during Reagan's second term.
You were there for the entire term.
Well, not quite the entire second term. I made my pitch to become his biographer in the spring of 1985, and I more or less dogged his footsteps from then on until he left the White House in the January of 1989, and I continued to see him a lot after that until he declared that he had Alzheimer's, and I stopped.
And you pretty much had the freedom to go where you wanted to go while you were in the White House and be where you wished to be?
Oh, yes. It was not total freedom. I mean, I couldn't walk into highly secure national security meetings, highly classified meetings. But I had the most extraordinary access, certainly in comparison with any other writer before me. And I not only had freedom to come and go and interview him face-to-face regularly, to follow him on trips, summit trips, and talk to his friends and family. I also had complete freedom to write whatever I wanted to write after he left the White House. They never, ever tried to control what I wrote.
They being the Reagan family?
Being the Reagan family and of course, his aides, too. But basically, Ronald Reagan and Nancy Reagan gave me complete freedom and never once tried to control what I read.
What do you see as his relationship with his children? His son, Ron, was quoted on 60 Minutes as saying his father would forget within minutes the person with whom he had just spoken.
Well, that's exactly that aloofness that I was telling you about earlier on, the actor's lack of interest in human character. It wasn't that Reagan's mind was going or anything. In fact, I've noticed that many great leaders in history have had the same impersonality of attitude. For example, General Marshall, the great foreign secretary, secretary of state under Franklin Roosevelt, was famous for not knowing who the hell anybody was, even his closest aides. And Reagan was rather like that. You know, I wrote a couple of paragraphs in this book early on when I was describing the young Dutch Reagan, the lifesaver in the Rock River of Illinois. And it's a couple of paragraphs which you might let me read you, because it describes him as having the personality of a long-distance swimmer.
Yes, please, read them for us, if you would.
And the paragraphs not only help explain this aloofness of Reagan's, this lifelong aloofness, but for some reason they seem to have struck a lot of the reviewers who've read it. And I was told by a young woman from the Harvard Crimson the other day that some of the jocks in her dorm at Harvard, these girls who are part of the Harvard swim team, have almost made a mantra of these two paragraphs, saying that whatever else you say about Edmund Morris, he certainly understands what swimmers feel like. So can I read them to you?
Yes, please. Go ahead.
This is Ronald Reagan at about the age of 22. Swimming had appealed to him from childhood as one of the few sports that he couldn't indulge without spectacles. Its coefficient of grace with power suited the natural economy of his movements. He enjoyed the feeling of going somewhere purposefully and rhythmically with nothing to distract him en route. Watching him, and indeed trying to imitate him, helped me understand at least partly the massive privacy of his personality. The swimmer enjoys a loneliness greater, yet oddly more comforting, than that of the long-distance runner. One tunnels along in a shroud of silvery bubbles, insulated from any sight or sound other than vague perspectives of water and the muted thunder of one's own arm strokes and breathing. Others may swim alongside for a while, but their individuality tends to refract away through the bubbles and the blur. Often I have marveled at Dutch's cool, unhurried progress through crises of politics and personnel, and thought to myself, he sees the world as a swimmer sees it.
So you're identifying a man that had a focus, if not an internal vision of his own destiny.
Exactly. Like a swimmer, he knew exactly where he was going, but like a swimmer, and indeed like an actor, he was not particularly aware of the people swimming alongside.
And that is contrary to people who don't have a full appreciation of Ronald Reagan as a man or as a president, and most likely had a different political perspective, who would say he was vague, that he was mentally vague.
Well, no.
I mean, are there? There's your vision, and I'm proposing another one in abstract.
Mm. Mentally vague. He could be vague in the sense that he was very dreamy, and it was noticeable even in youth how dreamy he was. It all goes back to that imaginative side I was talking about earlier. But if you read his diaries, which he wrote every night of his presidency for 8 years, you would be surprised at how factual and how unemotional and cool and almost executive they are in style. These are not the writings of a vague person. They're the diary entries of somebody who knew exactly what was going on, knew exactly how to conduct himself, and was quite undeluded by vanity or self-congratulation. It sometimes suited Reagan to be seen as a bumbler,
How do you mean?
Well, like Dwight Eisenhower, Reagan cultivated the image of the genial, sometimes rather doddery, chief executive. He seemed to be very shy, but the shyness was all part of his natural act. He knew that it made people want to make allowances for him, and it contributed to his charm. He sometimes affected great emotion as president in public situations, which he didn't feel in private. You can see from his diary he was not an emotional person, but he was very good at puddling up on public occasions, and you would think, oh God, the president is profoundly moved. So these were all the devices of the actor.
Let me take a moment and say again that our guest this week is Edmund Morris, the author of Dutch, a memoir of Ronald Reagan. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Tomatoes. Tomato sauce became a vegetable during his time as president. What do you think his intention was on that?
Could you explain a little what you mean by that cryptic question? I was laughing because Reagan had an allergy to tomatoes, and he just had to touch the tip of his tongue to a tomato, and he'd break out into he would swell up and go red and pink.
Well, there was a time when ketchup was classified as a vegetable that could be served to school children and qualified under the school lunch program.
Oh, yes. You mean this technicality whereby they could save money by pretending it was
That's right.
Vegetable. Yeah. Well, although I doubt that particular wrinkle was his idea, it's certainly true to say that Reagan endorsed all sorts of social programs, or at least endorsed the scaling down of all sorts of social programs, in the name of saving money and in the name of reducing centralized government's role in social programs. He believed that if tomatoes or tomato ketchup were going to be handed out, they should be handed out by local authorities and not with the connivance of the federal government. And the more money he could save by reducing federal participation in welfare schemes and social programs, then the happier he was. In other words, Reagan was not a particularly compassionate person.
I guess that comes across in many different levels in your book as I see it.
I rather hate to use the word compassionate because it's become such a buzzword of democratic liberals. But he genuinely felt that welfare, centralized in Washington, was something which existed mainly to perpetuate a vast government bureaucracy, and therefore was not true welfare reflective of the needs of local communities. This belief of his went right back to the Depression when his own father was a welfare officer in Dixon, Illinois, and when Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal came in, his father noticed how squads of federal executives marched into town with their steel desks and began to take over the administration of local relief simply to increase their own bureaucratic empire, and the quality of relief went down. So Reagan never changed in his attitude to that.
Edmund Morris, I'm interested in a little bit about you and your background. Being a person who was born and raised in Kenya, went to the university in South Africa, you come to America and write about Theodore Roosevelt and Ronald Reagan. What draws you to the personality and to be the biographer of United States presidents?
It was exactly your first phrase. What drew me was the personality. I was not drawn to Theodore Roosevelt because I wanted to write a major political biography. I'm not that much interested in politics as a science, but I am fascinated by human character. And when I see a character, a personality as all-American as Theodore Roosevelt's, as complex and as interesting, a personality which handled such great issues and rose to such great heights, I just want to write about a person like that. It's a natural story.
And so when you're given their personal diaries and the people who knew them to interview, you have the raw data.
Absolutely. The more I can find out about a man who fascinates me as much as Theodore Roosevelt, the more I can read his letters and study photographs and interview his children, the more I enjoy the detective work, which is really all that biographical research is.
What projects are you working on in the future?
Well, I'm going back to that very president. In fact,
to Teddy Roosevelt.
The Theodore Roosevelt, yes. I put aside a book about his presidency, which would have been a sequel to my first. The first book was T.R.'s pre-presidential life. And then I was halfway through the second book on T.R.'s presidency when I got this opportunity to write about Reagan. So I put Roosevelt aside, and I've gone back to that already, and I hope to finish that second volume on T.R. by the end of next year.
Well, Edmund Morris, I want to thank you very much for joining us on Radio Curious. And before we close, I'd like to ask you the question that I ask all of our guests at this time. And that is, could you please tell us a little bit about an interesting book that you've read lately?
Yes, I'd be happy to. I'll tell you about a novel that I'm just crazy about. And I believe it to be the greatest novel, American novel, to come out of World War II. It won the Pulitzer Prize in 1948, and it's by James Gould Cousins, C-O-Z-Z-E-N-S, who's an almost forgotten writer now, but is very eminent in his time, and was a candidate for the Nobel Prize. It's called Guard of Honor, and it describes 3 days in the life of a giant U.S. Air Force base in Florida in 1943. And it is an extraordinarily powerful masterpiece that, in my opinion, is streets ahead of anything by Norman Mailer and James Jones and any of those other guys. And I'm happy to say that the Modern Library has put it out in a reissued form. It came out last year. Guard of Honor by James Gould Cousins.
Edmund Morris, thank you very much for joining us on Radio Curious.
Thank you, sir. I enjoyed it.
Edmund Morris is the author of Dutch, a memoir of Ronald Reagan. The book he recommends is God of Honor by James Gould Cousins. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious can be found on our website, www.radiocurious.org. They're also available in CD format for $10 each. At Radio Curious, we appreciate your thoughts and ideas about our programming and enjoy hearing from you. Our address is Post Office Box 7, Ukiah, that's U-K-I-A-H, California, 95482. Our email address is curious@radiocurious.org. You've been listening to the archives of Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.